Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to Comic Book Nation and our special post-Christmas episode where we are doing one thing and one thing only. We are talking Wonder Woman 1984 in full spoiler discussion. We already did a kind of spoiler-free impression for you guys on our last regular episode, but on this special episode, we are digging in deep to everything Wonder Woman 1984, and we are going to be breaking down a lot of the big talking points that have come out of this movie and its very unprecedented launch on HBO Max at the same time in theaters. So, with me today for that special podcast, I've got my regular co-host, Janelle Wheeler.
Hey, everybody.
I have Mr. Producer Jim Viscardi back with us.
Oh, hello.
And one of our resident comic DC, we'll throw in Marvel, everything experts back with us. Jenna Anderson is back.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for the ovation.
I hope you guys, we have a standing ovation. It's just separate.
I will stand up.
Yeah. We need
an applause button as well.
I'm tight into this little setup. I do not have room to stand up, but I would if I could. But thank you guys all for joining me and taking some time out of the holiday to come on and break down this thing, Wonder Woman 1984. Without further ado, let's just get into it because, like I said, this is the thing, only thing we're doing on this special episode. So, first up, I don't need to go over my own impressions. If you want to hear that, you can listen to the last episode where me and Nicole Drum brought it, kind of gave you our feel, which was basically we both liked it. I think I was in the camp of saying I understand some of the divisive opinions that are going to come out of the film going in, just having done enough of this and specifically DC films enough. I knew kind of where we were headed, and sure enough, we are there. And so I'm not going to retread that. That's how I felt. Let's go around and hear from the people we haven't heard from who got to see the movie. Let's start with you, Janelle. What did you think of Wonder Woman 1984? Then we'll jump to Jenna and Jim. Gentlemen, as always, will go last.
So I honestly, my opinion is totally different. I thought it was a great movie to experience with my family at home on Christmas. We were looking forward to it all day, and I watched it with my parents and my fiance. And I left feeling great, excited, especially with the end credit scene. I lost my mind. I was just pumped. And then I started speaking to my family members who have not seen the first Wonder Woman with Gal. And they were, well, my mom fell asleep. I think it's very difficult for people who are not like huge comic book fans and watchers and consumers and don't have context to take this movie in. They don't understand the relationship with, you know, her boyfriend and why it's such a big deal. Like, I cried when she had to renounce her wish. I was extremely emotionally invested, and they were just kind of like, who's this dude? Like, and why does he look like this other guy? And I'm so glad they didn't talk during the movie and spoil, like, mess that up for me, because as a fan and someone who really liked the first one, it spoke to me, and I understood exactly what they were doing. I will say that, I think everyone really enjoyed the opening part, where they showed the baby girl, just killing it and being really creative and understanding like what her whip is about. And I feel like they did a good job of explaining things for those who hadn't watched it. That's what I felt like. You know, I thought that she talked about her boyfriend before he was reintroduced. I thought that she explained her, you know, her position of like who she is and what she's about. I very much thought it was great, but it is very interesting to hear from people who don't know all of that, don't have that information.
You bring up a really interesting point in that, like, your mom had no context coming in.
Right.
And because of that, she was immediately caught catching up. And so
right.
should a do, or does a good movie do that? Like, right. Like I don't know. Yeah. And like, they're all
so difficult to do.
You're asking a question that goes, you should have been asking like in the late
2000s. But like, yeah. But no, but I, and we'll get to kind of my thoughts about the era. But I mean, but like, that's, I think one of the biggest points that I see a lot of people having a hard time getting over. If you have watched Wonder Woman, if you have, you know, kind of been following along, then it's not as bad as,
yeah, I mean, even simply watching the trailer. Like, if you haven't right. watched the trailer, you're like, what is
But let's pass the caveat that most of these people we're talking about probably wouldn't have gone out to a theater
to
see Wonder Woman.
Very true.
And I'm not saying this about your mother, Janelle. I'm saying just like laying back on the couch, like, I don't get it.
Well, yeah, no, seriously. So it's, like, yeah. That's 100% the truth. And that's why, like, I have no shame saying, like, I really loved this because I knew I had some backstory and knew what it was going to be about. And I really enjoyed experiencing it at home. So I can only imagine I would have loved experiencing it in the theater. So,
yeah. All right, let's move to Jenna. Jenna, what did you think? Let's get you in here.
All right. Well, so I'm kind of in the same camp as you and Janelle in that I really enjoyed it. I know rewatching it the second time on Christmas Day, because like watching it on the screen or on my laptop was one thing, but then getting to see it on like the 80-inch TV at my mother-in-law's house, I was like, oh, this is the closest I'm getting to the cinematic experience right now. Like, I can't go to a movie theater. I'm totally fine with that, but it still felt more epic seeing it in a bigger context. To me, what I love so much about the movie, it has flaws, and I will not deny the fact that it has flaws, but it feels like such a love letter both to like the Donner Superman movie era and also to just like silver and Bronze Age comics. Like, I've been reading a lot of Bronze Age comics just kind of in my spare time this year, and it feels like such a reflection of that kind of storytelling of like, yeah, some things might not make sense. There's some things that don't necessarily age well, but it's trying to just make you feel a very specific emotion and walk away with a lesson. And I feel like the movie really, really succeeds in that.
That's something I wanted to touch on, so let's just kind of segue into that, which is the first question I had on here is, did this story make sense to you? My feeling was, if nothing else, I thought the story element of Wonder Woman 1984 was my favorite portion of it, because I was actually surprised by how much depth it had, and when I kind of re-examined it again, how well it actually holds together. I've seen some kind of criticism online saying people felt it was kind of a slapdash story and thrown together. And that's the one part I think I would stand on a hill and argue about. I don't feel like this was a slapdash thrown together story. I think there's a lot of it that makes sense. I think that a lot of it makes sense if you're willing to kind of take the deeper subtext of the story as opposed to just doing comic book stuff. Because some people say like the Dreamstone, I don't get it. Like, why didn't they just wish? Did nobody wish for like peace and all that happy stuff? And it's like, well, no, if you pay attention, the Dreamstone is a monkey's paw. They keep saying that to you. It's not just an open genie. It doesn't just grant wishes. It grants wishes that are supposed to be kind of deceptions. It gives you something while taking away something more important. So it's not like really a real wish granter. So you can't like just use it to wish for world peace, because it's probably not going to do that for you. Now, if you wish for something selfish, like I have all the power to enforce world peace because I have all the guns, then like, yeah, it gives you that, but it also like takes your family because they get killed in some violent act or something. And that's kind of how it works. And the movie really is clear about these rules, but I feel like people kind of are missing some of those subtle beats. And I think that's an important hinge, because it feeds into the character story, right? About why these three individuals, Diana, Steve, and Maxwell Lord, why the real villain isn't like a villain amassing power, but them dealing with their own stuff with this kind of, you know, metaphorical MacGuffin, this Dreamstone used as the kind of focal point for them. And that's what kind of created the power for the story. Like, I got emotional too in this movie when, you know, Diana had to renounce her wish in knowing what that meant. And even, you know, I was a blubbering idiot when Maxwell Lord's, you know, feeling, and maybe it's just me having a 2-year-old son right now, but like, you know, that whole thing about doing all this stuff because he, at the end of the day, just wants to be a big man and impress his son and do all that. And, you know, and the way that's resolved, I liked it that it wasn't traditional superhero, like, villain just wants big thing to make him feel like he has bigger peace, you know, and man.
Yeah, the villain had a sob story, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, and it was about emotional stuff. And mm-hmm. I think I like that it feels like a female-driven superhero story in thematics and not just swapping out characters. Like there was something unique that this director and, you know, this star were required to tell. And I think I love this more, like I said on the podcast, learning more about Patty Jenkins and through Rogue Squadron and her personal history and how much of this that I see in this about her dad and being a pilot and wishing for things back that you've lost and all that stuff. It's intense and personal. So I really love the story. How about you guys?
I think for me, one of the it's interesting. I watched it with my 5-year-old who, if HBO Max wanted to greenlight a Young Diana series, like she would be
that would be amazing.
Almost immediately.
I mean, even my fiance was like, I just want a story about like of her coming to age. Like,
yeah. Like it was don't get me wrong. This movie has a lot of weird things about it, right? Like there, it very much has a clear through line, which is an argument I don't necessarily get where people are like, oh, the story like kind of goes all over the place. I go, I don't know if we watched the same movie because it really kind of like holds your hand.
Yeah, it's almost really pretty much.
Through the movie. I think the thing for me is I think it was a little bit too long. I think at around 2 hours there are some, it's one of those, I don't know what the extra time accomplished other than potentially just like linger a little bit too long in certain moments. Now, obviously, I'm not saying this is a movie that needs to be an hour and a half, but like, you know, an hour and 40 minutes, hour 50, you know, like that's probably where I think certain scenes can get cleaned up, can get cleaned up a little bit. You know, there's obviously a lot of, you know, criticism around the Steve Trevor of it all, but I think it's one of those instances where like it seems like, you know, Jenkins and company wanted to make a movie that felt like it came out in the 80s. And so because of that, you know, they do things that have the movie feel like it came out in the 80s.
Is that 80s from 80s movies? They were Coke-filled ideas that made that cinema era happen. And you can't separate those two.
Right. I don't know what the expectations of this movie were, right? In that, like, just in following the discourse and all that, like, I don't know what anyone was expecting outside of just like another Wonder Woman movie, and I think that's where a lot of the hate that this movie is kind of getting. Where if you took this movie for what it was, it feels like a nice retro, you know, nice throwback kind of thing. We're living in an age where like nostalgia is king right now. And so how is that, you know, a movie that basically is shot and filmed like it took place in 1984, not that for more people? But I think it's for some of the reasons that even, you know, Janelle mentioned, like with her parents, I think there was a bit of a barrier for people who wanted to go to watch a Wonder Woman movie and have it feel like it maybe was a bit more for them to go try it out, but doesn't do enough to explain why things are the way they are. And it's a movie that like one of the criticisms I agree with is I feel like it didn't have enough Diana or, you know, enough Wonder Woman in it. The parts that did have Wonder Woman in it, I loved. And I thought were some of the best parts of the movie, but it felt few and far between, which is what brings me back to my, I think it was a little bit too long, where if it was a little shorter, I feel like you would have felt like you got more Wonder Woman in those moments. Evened it out a little bit.
I'm ironically the exact opposite. If I were to trim parts of this movie, the first things I would do is go back to those action sequences. I would trim the mall sequence. I would definitely cut the Middle Eastern sequence almost entirely because I don't think you really need it.
Yeah, that one
you don't accomplish anything. They were just chasing Maxwell Lord and didn't catch him. So I think you could just cut that and go straight to the White House scene. And I would have made the cheetah scene a little bit longer. I mean, that's kind of just my edits. Let's go to Jenna. What did you think about the story versus the action?
I think, again, it kind of yeah, it's very different from what people are kind of used to with superhero blockbusters right now. Like, they're used to an Endgame style movie that, even though there is a lot of character stuff and a lot of talking, the action kind of balances it out. I do think, like, yeah, going into it, I would have expected maybe a little bit more action, but I feel like the scenes that they had mattered so much and felt, again, it felt like an 80s movie, in the sense that you go into an 80s movie, it's maybe a little bit longer than it necessarily needs to be. It maybe, like, kind of sits around and lingers and stuff that it doesn't necessarily need to, but you still get this more comprehensive viewing experience out of it in a way that is, like, meaningful and is trying to further transport you into that. I wish that there was something in this movie that felt akin to the No Man's Land sequence in the first movie, because that is still just, like, mm-hmm. so powerful. And Great. Like, seeing that in theaters, like, every time I remember just even watching it in theaters, it's like I get goosebumps. Like, I feel like if I had maybe seen this on an IMAX screen with a packed audience on an opening day, there might have been moments that would have translated like that to me. But in the context of watching it at home on HBO Max, there was stuff that still made me emotional, and there were action sequences that were still really well executed, but there wasn't something on that level of, like, oh my gosh, this is, like, completely changing the game for superhero movies, and especially female-led superhero movies.
Agreed. I got the honor of going and seeing that scene first screened for, like, the first time over in London during an Edda Bay visit. And I got to walk up to Patty Jenkins over afterwards and be like, you did it. You did it. At a time where she was not even, like, confident. And I sounded like a crazy person, I'm sure. But she was like, thanks. And I was like, no, you did it. You don't understand. You did it. And then, like, yeah, there was that. I will say that caveat. There was that No Man's Land goosebump, like, feeling sequence that was missing from this movie.
I do feel like the closest thing is kind of like when she's flying for the first time, like that yeah. invisible jet scene are really the two scenes to me that, like, definitely gave me goosebumps and made me emotional. But it's more of a subdued feeling that you get out of that. It's not this kind of, like, big triumphant, like, boundary breaking thing that the No Man's Land scene was.
Yeah, agreed. Better first flight than Man of Steel. I'll put that out there. And I love Man of Steel. Janelle, what did you think about action entertainment, especially for the people who didn't really know what they were getting into?
I mean, I thought it was great. I think the invisible jet scene was way too long. Like, I was just kind of going, okay, why are we flying through fireworks? Like, I get it if you want it for, like, the trailer to have something really exotic and beautiful looking, but it took up way too much time. Like, it's little moments like that that went on too long that they could have, like Jim said, cut down, and it would have
the novelty of it really, like, wore off.
Well, yeah, I mean, the most exciting part to me about the invisible jet was when they're taking off and when it becomes invisible. The whole, like, fireworks scene didn't even need to happen. And if they wanted to make it happen, they could have cut it down. Like, there were a few moments like that throughout the whole thing that I'm like, they're dragging this out. Like, why are they dragging this out? Even some of Pedro's scenes, I mean, I love his acting. He's phenomenal. But I was like, I don't need this much of him. Like, I get it. He is this kind of guy. This is his backstory. Like, that. Those were my criticisms, right? But, like, I had nothing to do on Christmas. I couldn't visit family. So for me, like, a long movie was fine. but if I was in the theater and I had to use the restroom, I would be a little, like, I would be running out during the fireworks scene. Like, going to, well, you know.
Again, this is another one of those cases where I do kind of wonder about the format we're seeing this. Like, would the fireworks sequence feel differently in a major theater?
Stunning, right? Well,
yeah. But even on that scene, like, the part that they probably could have trimmed is the part of, like, Diana looking down at the clouds, right? You can still have the scene of them, like, just going through and the fireworks are blowing up in the sky, they're having an explosion, but then, like, it lingers too long where you're just like, you're looking at the clouds, you know, kind of color up. Like, that, like, I specifically remember that as a moment where I literally looked down at my phone to just, like, pick something else, and then came back to it because I was like, oh, okay, are we still doing this?
Well, she had to set up the emotional payoff so that when Steve is gone later and she's in the cloud, she can remember these memories.
I mean, I thought the flying scene was too long, too.
Just on the buoyancy of America's July 4th celebration.
Then they needed to make the plane part shorter to make time for the clouds. Like that.
I don't,
like,
believe what I'm hearing. This is the most anti-American crap I've ever heard. You needed less fireworks in the July scene. No.
To what Janelle mentioned about Maxwell Lord, it's interesting because, like, I felt like they spent a lot of time with Maxwell Lord, but, like, the one thing that they didn't really explain, and I get it, like, you don't need to explain everything, but, like, they didn't necessarily explain the stakes of what being basically the stone was. You knew his health was failing him. You knew, like, you could tell, like, his eyes bloodshot or whatever. But, like, if that were to continue, like, what would have happened?
You've seen the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know.
No, but then that brings up the other point, right? Like, did you need Diana to stop Maxwell Lord? And like, if Maxwell Lord was inevitably going to, you know, kill himself anyway from just doing all this wish stuff, you know, to what end, right? And so not that it like that ruins the movie for me. It absolutely doesn't. And I look at these movies in a way and grade them on a scale of like, will I rewatch it? And there are plenty of other movies I will not rewatch. And this is one I probably would watch.
Yeah, I agree. Me too.
Over again. And so, in that instance, it works for me.
Let's get to some of the more, before we get out of here, I'm going to take on just some of the more controversial scenes that seem to be really becoming big talking points on social media right now. There too. There is, this gets a little more adult, kids. I'm sorry, but we're just going to talk about some of this stuff. The first scene is Barbara's transformation and the kind of pivotal scene using these two people on the street that she knows, this guy who's a sexual, you know, harasser, drunk, possibly worse, and the homeless man that she helps. So there's that sequence where she's fully, you know, we're at midpoint becoming Cheetah, where she's getting the physical strength and all that stuff. And she sees that guy who harassed her and tried to assault her before. And then there's this very dark scene where she just like nearly beats him to death in the street. A lot of people have a lot of problems with this scene, saying that they don't understand kind of the point of view they're supposed to take, or like what side they're supposed to take. You're not supposed to side with this guy who's harassing and attacking women, but are you not supposed to root for Barbara either? My takeaway from this scene is it's a very difficult scene and a very, I mean, ballsy one, for lack of a better term, to put into a movie, because I think the point is, again, the Dreamstone. If you go back to kind of the thematics, it is that, yes, Barbara now has the power to turn around and dominate this guy who was trying to dominate her. But I think the commentary that the movie says is that it's not kind of justice or this kind of balancing thing to just take power and use it badly against people who have used it badly against you, and to do that, and that in her kind of sacrificing her, the nice parts, and that's what the guy, the bum, is there for, right? To balance out that she's not just, this is not like a cathartic celebration. It's her losing the part of herself that made her a good person, a compassionate person, even though she was mistreated often, she still had a heart and all that good, but that she's losing that. And it's supposed to scare you, I think.
Does that come before or after Diana points that out to her? Like,
it's, you know, before.
It is before. Okay.
Yeah, that's at least a half an hour before, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because this is when Barbara's still kind of secretly going through this transformation process.
I feel like it's supposed to create juxtaposition. Like, it's, you're supposed to see that, like, how Diana handled it as opposed to how, you know, Cheetah's going to handle it going forward. She wished to be just like her, but yet she's not. She's not. She can't be her because she doesn't have that truth and like the honor and all of that stuff holding her, you know, accountable. So that's cool.
Well, and I would argue, like, I've seen so many people who have just really liked Cheetah, or really they've liked the Barbara parts of Cheetah almost more than the final scene of Cheetah, because just her characterization is so strong. And it's like, I feel like that scene, as controversial as it might be, feels kind of like an extension of the reason why people relate to her. Like, yeah, she is kind of losing part of her humanity and part of herself. But then at the same time, when you look at Wonder Woman as a character who was created by a guy who was overly feminist and was using the book to kind of tackle misogyny and all of the different things that like women face, it felt like kind of an extension of that. Like, yeah, it's supposed to be controversial, but you're supposed to kind of be thinking about it as it's happening.
Right. And I agree 100% in that, like, final Barbara is almost feels like an entirely different character than the Barbara that we got to know in the, like even throughout her transformation or whatever, like her, you know, like, I want to be, you know, an apex predator and all that. Like, I don't necessarily know like that, if that was like literally from there is where it like just kind of goes off the rails for me with her character. And even that fight, like the stakes don't know what those stakes are, because like what, like what's the outcome there? Like, oh, she beats Cheetah. Okay. Well, you know, to get to Maxwell Lord. Okay, fine. But like, what does that mean? You know, for Barbara, what does that mean for Cheetah?
I think it's Barbara to Diana story is an understated thing that does deserve more discussion, because it is about a subtle thing about kind of female friendships and looking at each other and her seeing Diana as her imagined way of, this is how I become powerful or better or thing, is being somebody else, which is, again, a bad notion. She was already a good person and had her own good qualities that she just was not embracing. And I think I believe the transformation, because, you know, I think it was a kind of a metaphorical real life thing to a person who goes through that period of maybe adolescence when they're not popular in something, and then they grow into themselves. And this is male and female. I've seen it on both sides. When the ugly duckling grows into a beautiful swan, but becomes like really a bastard at the same time, when they get that kind of like taste of this thing they didn't have before, and it's corrupting, right? Like, I know plenty of people who become the pretty person who now is no longer a nice person at the same time. And so I thought their friendship was at the stakes. It wasn't a stake for the movie. It was a stake between these two women. And like, what happens if, when they have this conflict, we could take about the steps of that. The other thing I thought it was that's important to note for Wonder Woman is Wonder Woman. Part of what I love about her character and in the people who get that character right is that she has this massive amount of power on the level of Superman, but how she chooses to use it is very different. Love is her, and compassion is her power. Like, that is the core of it, right? And so the Cheetah scene actually reminded me of an echo of the scene briefly in the first film at the end where Steve dies and Diana goes ape crap for a minute there and just starts wiping out soldiers. I mean, these are bad World War I, II soldiers, but you're just like, holy crap for a minute. Because she's just, I mean, she can slaughter these people before she has to kind of pull it together again and you know, say that's not the way like I do things, and that's not the way I use my power. And so I thought that was important. And I thought, like you said, the juxtaposition with Cheetah was important. The other lingering topic of we just want to talk about is the 80s body swapping in the wokeness of 2020 doesn't seem to be going over well with people. This idea that Steve Trevor inhabited this other man's body and then, you know, did all these things with Diana, including, you know, sexual activity, obviously, has some people freaking
out. Oh my God, I didn't even think of that.
Yeah. I would first say we should do a PSA for non-binary trans soul people. Like, don't insult them. You don't know. No, I'm just kidding. That's a joke. But in all seriousness, like, I don't know. That's just an 80s idea. I can't, like, really speak to that. Like, Switcheroo, Freaky Fridays, and things like that are kind of just from that tradition. So I don't know if...
it's a tough one. It's a tough one to kind of dissect in that, because it feels like there are a number of other ways that they could have brought Steve back that they didn't necessarily need to. And so it's easy to kind of write off, oh, like the 80s of it all, but like, we're not in the 80s. Right. And so like, I get that it's, you know, it's an 80s movie and it is a thing that, you know, that happened. It's just weird. It's a bit of a weird decision to make. I feel like they could have gotten around.
Let's just ground this. But again, it's part of the story, right? Like,
no, I understand that.
Get Steve back.
Right.
It's a delusion. It's a kind of self-deluded thing that she kind of slips into.
Jenna, it sounds like you were about to, it looked like you were about to say something.
No, I'm completely in the same camp of like, I was kind of thinking about it earlier. It feels very akin to like a movie like Big, where if you think about the relationship in Big and the fact that it's a kid who wished to be an adult and then like had a relationship with an adult woman, it kind of breaks your brain a little bit. So yeah, it is like the
you're ruining me. I've never thought of these things. You're corrupting me.
It's like a Funny or Die sketch where the genders get reversed, and it is so funny because then like when the adult man thinks about it, he's like, oh my God, I'm going to go to jail. This is so horrible. And so like I see this as kind of an extension of, yes, it is an 80s thing. Like, yeah, there is a conversation to be had about that scene and about the kind of 2020 lens to look through it. But again, I don't feel like I don't feel like Patty and the people involved with this movie were deliberately trying to court a controversy. I think it was just kind of leaning into the weirdness of an 80s movie and leaning into the weirdness of the comics. Like, there are so many weird comics where it's like, oh, Lois Lane gets body swapped with somebody, or Steve gets body swapped with somebody. Like, that is a trope that gets used very liberally in comics and doesn't really have a lot of justification behind it, other than that it's just what the story needs. And so I kind of saw this as that, of like, it's just what the story needed to move forward. I would have loved to have seen an alternate version where you didn't necessarily need to use another dude to make it happen, but I feel I can respect the decision of using it that way.
It's funny too, because you brought up the analogy twice now about this movie feeling like a comic book, and honestly it really does, and it's one of those things that I kind of love about it. It's got such bombast to it that really, like, you know, it you get from like bombast to bombast to bombast kind of throughout the movie. But like, to me, it's what, you know, at the end of the movie, looking back on it, I go, I had some fun, and that was just like a nice a nice fun thing. I also kind of wanted to circle back to one more point that Kofi made about Diana and her powers, because a thing that happened in the movie that I thought was actually really interesting was, everyone remembers the big moment of Diana clacking her wrists together and just, like, you know, doing that giant thing. And that was a big kind of like holy S moment in the first one. And it in this one, like, her go-to move didn't work as well. And she had to come up and do other things to do that. And I really liked that as an exploration of Diana's other abilities and other things that she's capable of outside of, you know, what could have been easy as to why doesn't she just do the thing? Why doesn't she just, you know, do that? And so I really like that point. I didn't mean to necessarily backtrack a little bit, but I thought that
I wanted to bring up kind of as an extension of that. Like, I remember when the first trailer came out, Gal and Patty were saying, like, she isn't using her shield and she isn't using her sword. And they were like, she doesn't need to in this movie because she's not going to war. She's just dealing with interpersonal conflict. She's not dealing with hundreds of soldiers in battle. And I love in the movie that they acknowledge it, because they're at the White House and Steve goes and grabs like a katana off the wall and like a plate or something from the White House. And she's like, no, don't use that, because the people under Maxwell Lord's control don't have agency in this scenario. They don't deserve to be dealt with in that kind of way, because this is outside of their control. And so I love that, because it feels like this extension of how do you use her powers and her skill set without just being like, oh, I'm just going to mow people down with my sword and my shield.
Yeah. Well, it's funny too, because I think it's one of those things, and like the movie as a whole, and like the setup of the premise with the villain and whatever, like that one, and it's the biggest problem with these like potentially shared universe type movies is like, where the hell is the Justice League when Maxwell Lord is going, you know, doing all of this crazy stuff, right? Like, it's just Diana on her own. Like, what's going on?
There's a 10-year-old Bruce Wayne who's very, very sad at the same exact time.
Oh, right. Oh, you're right. You're totally right. I totally forget that this is in N84. Justice League isn't necessarily around. But at the same time, it's like, is she literally the only one? I guess she would have been. Now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, okay, now it makes more sense. And now I take that back. I'm sorry.
Hey guys, can we take a couple of questions from the chat?
Yes. We got time for one or two. Yeah.
Okay. So like right off the bat, Dom Solo was kind of calling out Gal's acting chops. What are your thoughts on her portrayal of Diana and her acting up against Chris Pine and Pedro and all of that?
Chris Pine getting dress scene and like her, you know, just like her witty banter. I could watch a movie with the two of them. I don't care what the hell it is. Like, they could read the phone book together. And it's like, they have, I thought, such great chemistry. But I think Diana on her own has really cemented her Wonder Woman. And I love it. We're going to look back in like 30 years and we are going to look at Wonder Woman in the same way that, like, you know, my parents' generation or whatever look at Linda Carter as their Wonder Woman. And I think that's a really cool, a cool thing. And I think she got through a lot of the important moments of this movie really, really well.
I also don't think a lot of people ever understand or appreciate like the straight man role in a kind of comedic ensemble. Mm-hmm. If you don't know what that means, it's straight man is basically the person. It's basically Michael Bluth and Jason Bateman in Arrested Development, right? Like all the other characters are zany and oversized, but there has to be a person who's kind of straight faced and kind of dry. And in the first film, it was more Chris Pine's role to be that. Well, Diana was wide eyed and naive and cute. And in this one, she is the kind of straight man to, it's a reversal. He's the wide eyed, naive person, and she's the straight man who kind of is just like, okay, kid, come along. And I think a lot of people think that's like bad acting, but it actually takes a lot to be a good straight man.
To be able to do that.
Yeah. And so I've never put it. Plus, she is Wonder Woman now. So she could just walk down the street as Gal Gadot, and I'll be like, Wonder Woman! I'm not mad about that. Was there one more question before we get out of here?
Okay. Hold on. I want to know what Jenna.
Sorry.
No, Jenna. I completely agree. Just co-sign everything y'all just said. So.
Perfect.
Nothing will be as bad as when I took my mom to the Wonder Woman premiere, and in a van full of people, she came out and everybody was gushing about Gal Gadot, and she was like, she looks all right. And the dead silence and in the van. And I was like, Ma! And just like, yeah, that was great. But anyway, moving right along was our second question.
Nerd with Tech is, I'm excited for the next movie where she should be flying a lot more. What are your thoughts for the next one, since we know
that's a perfect dovetail, because that's what we were going to end with. So, Norbit, thank you. I'm in for Wonder Woman 3. I think we can stop with the period thing. I don't think we need to do the X-Men type deal here, like hopping decades. I don't need Wonder Woman 1996. even though I love 96, but I don't need like a Biggie joke or something, or, you know, East Coast, West Coast. Like I think we can just go to modern times and start to progress this story past the Snyderverse and just see. And I love the Snyderverse.
But that's the biggest question though, right? Like what does a present day Wonder Woman look like? Like, is it
that's
like,
why we need Wonder Woman 3, Jim?
Well, no, but I mean, but like in a world where like we're about to get the Snyder cut, and this is theoretically the same Diana, and like Flashpoint's going to happen. Like it'll be really interesting to see how they make that work. Am I excited for it? 100%. I'm just really curious to see how they have to basically move the chess pieces on the board to get to that point, and then what that leaves Patty and Gal to do for the third movie.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. And I'm kind of in the mindset of like, my hope for Wonder Woman 3 is you kind of further expand her supporting cast, because she has a lot of supporting characters in the comics who are beloved and who deserve to be on the big screen in some context. And there's like any combination of them that you could fit together that would be really interesting. And like, for me personally, ever since it was announced that like this one was going to be in the 80s, I was like, okay, so the third one should be set in the present day, and you should have Charlize Theron and Patty reunite and team up again and have her play Veronica Kale, because that is a Wonder Woman villain who is like very underrated and who feels really perfect in kind of a modern day context. And so I feel like that would be kind of my hope for the movie, but I know whatever idea Patty and Gal have going on is probably going to be great either way. So
Janelle, do you have any thoughts?
You know, honestly, the only thing, because you guys have so much more to go off of, and I just respect y'all's opinions so much, but the only thing that kind of like sat kind of weird with me was Cheetah didn't renounce her wish, and they left her hanging in a really weird place, and there was no bow on the end of her story, and I was very confused, and I'm like, are they going to bring her back? And that's the only thing I can think of for the next movie. Like, are they going to bring her back and finish her story? Or like, what happened to her? Is she like, was her wish taken away from her? We literally didn't see her renounce it. We saw her almost renounce it, but she didn't. And I'm just like, is that going to, is she going to be in modern day in the next movie with Diana? I don't know.
All right.
Yeah.
I think I just want to see, I want to see modern day Wonder Woman, because we've been tracking. I mean, the first one was about kind of the turn of feminism, and that this was a little bit different, a little bit more muddled on that front. But I would love to see kind of everything after 2020, after the last few years, kind of Wonder Woman exploding into this time period and kind of full modern celebration of her, because of, she's become crazy, even bigger now. So I would love to just, you know, let's take that victory lap. It doesn't have to be hard. We can just take a nice victory lap around the DCEU or whatever we're calling it. But that's my wish. So that's it for me. That's our thoughts on Wonder Woman 1984. Does anybody have any last things they want to get off their chest before we... Any
I feel like everybody should go around and just give it a rating.
Oh, gosh.
Okay. I'll take a rating or how you rank it in the DC movies. Or both, if you think you can do it.
Okay.
I'll just go really quickly. I would rate this about a 7.5 to 8 out of 10 for me would be. Yeah. And I would put it, funny enough, I don't have a DC movie ranking yet because I don't think the DCEU has gotten into any official sequels yet. This is like the first one. So yeah. It's kind of hard to judge. I don't even know how to think about it yet.
Batman vs. Superman is a sequel to Man of Steel.
That was an event film. So this is actually the first real like sequel. So I'm just kind of putting my thoughts together on that still. But 7.5 or 8 out of 10 for me.
Yeah, I'm at a 7. I didn't hate it, and I kind of liked it.
I'm probably at a 7 for it, I think, for me.
Yeah, I guess I would say it's 7.5 or 8, probably.
Yeah.
All right, so we're all in general agreement. That's us, but we want to know what you guys think, so hit us up at the Comic Book Nation Twitter handle or the Comic Book Nation hashtag. We also have plenty of Wonder Woman 1984 breakdowns, insights, Easter eggs, references, analysis, essays on comicbook.com DC, so be sure to check all of that out. We are going to take the rest of this week off, but we're going to come back in 2021 strong with Season 3. Oh, that's a 2. This is a 3. There you go.
That's a 3. Boom. There you go.
Yeah, my fingers weren't working. So this has been a crazy season 2. Thank you for everybody who rode with us, all our regulars. We really appreciate you during this crazy pandemic stretch. I mean, it's pretty much
the same thing for everyone who tunes in live, because that's really been a fun aspect that we've added to the show. And so,
and we're going to be doing more of it. We're going to be getting some guests, more fan interaction, live shows. All that's coming in season 3. We've been starting, bubbling, working on this stuff. So really excited. But thank you guys again for getting through 2020 with us. And we'll see you in 2021. This is Comic Book Nation. Go see Wonder Woman 1984 if you've somehow listened to this and didn't watch it for some reason. All right. We'll see you guys next time. Peace.
Bye.